We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank, your partner in possible. Coming up, the latest episode of the KCSN Draft Show, getting Chiefs Kingdom ready for the 2023 NFL Draft. Hosted right here in Kansas City with the best analysis, interviews, and content you can find to stay up to date and in the know. With that said, let's begin the show.
What's going on, Chiefs Kingdom? Welcome back to Radio Row here at the 2023 NFL Scouting Combine. I'm BJ Kissel. This is the KCSN Draft Show. We have a special guest. You might recognize him from KCSN Update throughout the regular season, and Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus. Thanks for joining us. Talk a little draft, a little combine, a little bit of everything today.
Dude, hearing you intro the show, it's like I missed it. You know, like we did this every week for like 4 months, and just hearing you intro that, I was like, oh, I'm back.
Go to DraftKings. I'll do the whole thing. Go to DraftKings. Just go there and use code KCSN. All right, I want to talk. So it's going to be a two-part show, and I want to talk defense with you.
Okay.
I want to talk prospects. And because we spend so much time, especially now, you turn on the television, watch the combine coverage, it's crazy numbers that we're seeing through these workouts and
truly,
what these guys are doing.
Yes.
That I want to talk specifically about three positions. I want to talk edge rusher, defensive tackle, and safety. And I want to get two players that you would bang, that you'd pound the table for, guys that you like, that would be projected around second, third-ish round, like a day two pick.
Sure.
Because we spend so much time talking about the top guys and the guys that are going off on the Nolan Smiths and all those. Like, we're going to talk about those guys. But you guys that study this, you know so much about it. You get here and it's just kids in candy land running around with all the draft coverage,
really getting
a chance to talk to these guys. Fun to see everybody that's so passionate about this cover it. But let's start, Trevor, with edge rusher.
Okay.
Who are guys second-ish, third-ish round, those day two guys that you really like, that you would go to, you know, your general manager and be like, we got to take this guy.
This guy, I guess he's a projected second round pick, because I'm really not hearing a lot of first round buzz about him. But that also, to me, makes it feel like one of the most underrated players in this class. And it's BJ Ojulari, the edge rusher from LSU. I really like this dude. I mean, I feel like he understands his pass rush profile. He's more of a speed rusher. Mm-hmm. He already talked about a lot of the different moves that he has, a lot of the ways that he likes to attack the pocket. He's consistently going over how to attack the half man, as coaches will say, right? Mm-hmm. Attacking one side of the shoulder. He gets the outside moves. He's saying he's working on the inside counters to have a well-rounded speed attack when he is attacking the pocket. But this is a pretty productive edge rusher. I mean, he wore number 18 for LSU, which is a prestigious number. It's not like anybody can wear that number for LSU. And he won it because of the leadership qualities that he has, for how much he improved, how much of a difference maker he was on that defense. And if the last name sounds familiar, he is Azeez Ojulari's younger brother. So he has that NFL pedigree there for him. He talked about at the podium, yeah, I'm always in competition with my brother, including being the higher selected brother. So his brother went early second round. So maybe that will happen with Ojulari. But man, I just feel like, yeah, second round seems like where a lot of people have him projected, but I think that he could end up giving some first round value if he ends up being a day two pick.
Love to hear it. Now, I'm curious your thoughts on this, because you look at the Chiefs' edge position. We'll see what happens throughout free agency as we get closer with Frank Clark. It's crazy how over the last year, the opinion on bringing him back, and now Chiefs fans are like, we got to bring, if the money's right and it doesn't get, you know, crazy, and Chiefs don't have a ton of cap space this offseason. We spent a lot of time talking about that with Orlando Brown Jr. What are you going to do there? Chris Jones, what are you going to do there? But how important is it within your edge rush group that you've got different skill sets? We talk about it with wide receivers a lot. You build like a basketball team.
Yeah,
you've got your point guards, your big guys. You can create different mismatches. Do you feel like NFL teams need the same? Because, again, looking at the edge, depending upon what happens with Frank Clark, George Karloftis isn't really a speed guy, more of a power, more of a little bit of everything, not known as one thing. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's important for teams, if the Chiefs are going to go get another edge rusher, to have more of a speed type guy? Do you think it's important to have, or is it?
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to have you stop there, but I do think that it just kind of depends how the defensive coordinator wants to set things up. And I think that you see maybe these different styles of edge rushers throughout teams, because let's face it, if you are a complete player who wins with size, speed, and power, you're getting picked in round one, right? But there are edge rushers that get picked that aren't round one guys. And I think when you get into rounds two, three, and then, you know, the mid rounds, maybe the early parts of day three, it's specialized guys. It's like, okay, it might not be the full, well-rounded profile that we want on all three downs, but this guy might be a really good speed rusher. So instead, he's a specialized player in that regard. You might have another guy where it's like, all right, he's a little bit more heavy-handed. He's a hand-in-the-dirt kind of guy. He'll play five tech for you. He'll be able to defend the run. He could be a heavy package guy or an early down guy for you. So I think that it is important to have a mix of these different styles of pass rush, because you also never know exactly how your defensive line is going to evolve, right? I think that every offseason, teams change a lot, and sometimes they change and it's not according to plan, right? Like sometimes you could have a guy hit free agency and you go, okay, we feel pretty comfortable about bringing this guy back. And he goes, no, I can make a lot more money on the open market. And you go, all right, you can go try. And then some team does end up signing him. So then you go, well, that was going to be a major part of our defense. And then you might look at the defense and go, you know, we were a little bit more heavier last year, but the way that I see things and the guys on the roster, it might be a little bit more advantageous if we have a couple of more stand-up speed rushers and things like that. So I think it is important to be versatile, because no matter what you are thinking one year, it could look different than next. And so that's kind of how it goes into that. Of course, the better, well-rounded guys are going to get picked in the first round, but then those specialized players, you know, getting more of a power guy, getting more of a speed guy, you'll have that opportunity throughout the draft.
I had that conversation years ago with Mike Borgonzi when the Chiefs were still doing their 3-4, and he was talking about trying to find those outside linebackers, those 3-4 edge rushers in Bob Sutton's defense. Like, well, you need a guy who can cover, you need a guy who can hold the edge, speed, power, all of that stuff. And he's like, you're looking for a unicorn and you're looking at a top 10 pick. And well, we're not picking the top 10. How do we find the traits to execute some of those things, similar to what you were saying? And I always think it's interesting, because you read some of the draft coverage and you do a great job, and there's a lot of people who do a phenomenal job, but it's interesting talking with draft people. They spend a lot of time, a number of them, talking about what guys can't do. And when you talk to the coaches, they just look at what a player can do and then figure out a way to fit that within the system. So player's a little bit lighter of an edge rusher, but he's got a great speed rush. Draft him, like, well, he's not going to play. He can't defend the run. Like, he's too light. He's got sand in the pants, whatever you want to call it.
He
can't do that. It was like, defensive coordinator would be like, yeah, but I could bring him in on third down. I can do this with him. I can do that 100% with him. And they're not going to put him in a position to not be successful if they can't find the guys who can do everything. All right. You mentioned one edge rusher. Give me a second edge rusher, day two-ish, that intrigues you, that you go pound the table for.
I'll go Derek Hall from Auburn. I think that Derek Hall is, again, underrated in this class, man. I feel like he was a productive player at Auburn. I think that he brings a really good combination of size, speed, strength to his game. You know, I just think that he's kind of figuring out exactly how to hone in on his athletic ability. And we saw him test really well here in Indianapolis, that he measured in really well. He feels like he's got like a dense body type, that he's hard to move off the line of scrimmage when he's really able to
anchor.
He looks
like a grown man running. I watched his 40 yesterday. He's one of the guys that's like, wow, that's a dude.
And it was damn fast too. So he's got the weight, he's got the size, and he's got the speed and explosiveness to him, but he's still figuring it out, which is not a problem, right? I want to make sure that other people know, that people out there know this as well. When you point to production in college, yes, it's great to see these guys succeeding, getting into the backfield, racking up stats at a younger age, and you should note that.
Yeah.
But what you are picking on draft night is not the finished product with these guys. Often you hope it's not even close.
Right.
So you instead look at the mold of what they can be, the things that they're doing well, the flashes, what you can build off of. And Derek Hall feels like somebody who, again, feels like a day two, early day two kind of a guy, might even slip to day three. I can't imagine he's going to slip to round three after what we saw in Indianapolis, but he is somebody who I would definitely have on my radar for sure.
That's what one of my favorite questions I used to ask the GM was John Dorsey and then Brett Veach was, how do you figure out guys who love the game of football versus how do you, or guys who love what football can do for them because they're good at it.
Correct.
And you get to the draft and this is that time where you start to separate it. And the Chiefs have been so good. And it's the big, you know, equalizer is how do you figure out what makes these guys tick and what they're into and figuring out guys. And that's where your area scouts come in. And I'm sure you talk with those guys and who's going hard on a, you know, an early September practice on a Tuesday,
right?
Who's getting his teammates ready to go, or, you know, in November when the team's, you know, under 500,
yep.
Like, is he still going hard at practice? Those are the guys that you want to build around. And that tells you more than sometimes what they say at a podium, you know, when the whole world is watching. All right, let's move on to the defensive tackle position.
Okay.
Again, day two pick, who are you running up there pounding the table for? And I'm going to give you a pass on not bringing up Felix Anidike Uzama because our tables are next to each other. And I heard you singing his praises yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I'm just assuming that you think he's going to be a day one pick.
I think he could be a back end of the first round guy.
He
is somebody who I've had as a target as a top 50 player, potential back end of the first round guy. And, you know, you go back to his podium session. You brought up podiums. I mean, I was so impressed with him. Mm-hmm. They were asking him all sorts of questions about, you know, like what kind of pass rush moves are you bringing to the NFL? And, you know, what are some of your favorite moves? What do you like to do? And he was so detailed in how he answered those questions. And it wasn't just the what, right? He wasn't saying, oh, I like to use a cross chop. I like to use a ghost move. I like to have a dip and rip or whatever. He wasn't just saying the words of the moves. He would say the moves, but then explain how he did them and why he did them. That's a major difference. And so I'm like, this dude gets it. He's got the body type. He's a bigger, more traditional 4-3 defensive end, but he can play a little stand up too. So I like Felix Anidike Uzomah a lot. And I think that he could definitely be a back end of the first round guy. But moving on to interior defensive tackles, Keanu Benton has to be the highlight from Wisconsin. This dude has made a ton of money throughout, I'll say, this past season and into the draft process, including what we saw at the Senior Bowl. He came into Wisconsin and got his starting spot based on being a nose tackle type, a zero, a one technique guy who was just going to plug things up in the middle, had a ton of strength, a lot of size, and over this past year has really worked on his pass rushing. I remember going back and watching an interview of him last summer. Local media was asking him, hey, what are some goals? What do you want to work on? He's like, I want to be a better pass rusher, straight up. And I've tried to work on it this summer, and I'm going to try to work on it this season. And throughout the season, as he continued to get opportunities to play on third down, he was able to showcase that. And then we see at the Senior Bowl, he's got incredibly fast hands, very strong player. And then at the combine, testing very well athletically. So now you go, okay, well, now he has an athletic ceiling that we have faith in for him to continue to be a better pass rusher. So doesn't feel like he's going to be a round one guy, always kind of felt like a day two player. But man, I would have told you, shoot, I know some people have been running mock drafts and I've seen him round three, Keanu Benton, because he seems like a fan favorite all around. I don't know if you're going to get him in the third round, but there is a chance that I think the Chiefs could probably get him in the second.
All right, let's move on, because you can never have enough solid defensive tackles. It's like wide receiver. You take one every year. Who's another one of those guys on day two that you'd pound the table for?
I'm very intrigued. I don't know if I'd pound the table for him, but I'm very intrigued by Mazi Smith from Michigan. Incredible athlete, was number one on Bruce Feldman's freak list going into the season for just how athletic this guy is. And it's a crazy athletic pipeline that we've seen over the last couple of years with these Michigan defensive linemen. And he feels like the next to the bunch. Now he's got a little bit of hot and cold tape. And I would love to know why that was the case, because you go watch the Ohio State game, you go, okay, this kid might be a first round pick. Like, he's obviously trying very, very hard in a rivalry game. I think Michigan State was the same way. But you watch a couple of the lesser opponents. Indiana was one of them. And I ended up watching four or five games of them because I was seeing kind of like a hot and cold streak to him. And it's just not that quite dominant player. It's like, all right, why? You know, getting to the bottom of why was this tape so dominant? Why was this tape a little bit more maybe letting your foot off the gas? Is that something that's going to be the same with him? But I think because there was not that consistent production, again, he's going to be somewhere in day two. But that athletic potential, you got to figure out what makes him tick. Is he somebody who loves football a lot? And if he is, that's somebody that I think you'd take a chance on.
All right, let's move to the third and final position, talking safeties. Chiefs, we'll see what happens with free agency with Juan Thornhill. We saw the Chiefs, a lot of defensive backs last year that stepped up. We've seen rookies step in, and it's interesting talking about Steve Spagnuolo. I always go back to the comment that he made last summer at training camp. I think the question was from Sam McDowell, the Kansas City Star, asking about, you know, veteran. He prefers veteran defensive backs. He doesn't like playing rookies. And then he goes out there and has four rookies on the field during the Super Bowl on defense. So safety would be a position you could see the Chiefs attacking at some point in this draft. Again, day two, top 100 pick? Who do you really like that could be available?
I got two that I like. And this safety class is very interesting because it's a lot of safeties by label who are actually slot defenders. And so there's not as many like traditional safety players as I feel like there normally has been in draft class in the past. Like, for example, Brian Branch, Antonio Johnson, they're probably everybody's 1-2 as safeties in this class. Both of them are more slot defenders. They're more nickel defenders than they really are safeties. And so I won't say those guys. I think they might be first round picks anyways. I certainly think that of Brian Branch, but two safeties who I really like, who I think are going to be available on day two. First one's Sidney Brown from Illinois. As long as this guy is healthy, I mean, he's a monster. He is somebody who loves to be the communicator in the defense, loves to be that centerpiece of the defense. They give him the freedom to roam from that strong safety spot, kind of be closer to the linebacker level so he can communicate with the front, communicate with the corners, the linebackers, everything. And they also let him play very free because he's got great instincts for where the ball is going. You can tell he puts so much work into watching film, diagnosing the offenses, seeing their tendencies, seeing where the ball might go, how to read the quarterback. He's got the ball production. He's a good hitter. He's athletic. I mean, Sidney Brown is just absolutely fantastic. He put that on in the Senior Bowl as well. And then the second guy, another Senior Bowl guy, is Jamie Robinson from Florida State. Another player who I was very impressed with his podium session, because we all love to use the buzzword of versatility, right? And it can mean so many different things. We're seeing so many different hybrid players in today's football, whether it's these tight end wide receivers, these corner safeties, these safety linebackers, these yeah. linebacker D-lines, whatever. We're just seeing so many different hybrid tweener kinds of players that everybody loves to talk about versatility. Jamie Robinson, when he was asked about this, because he played a lot of different spots on Florida State's defense, he broke down exactly what went into him becoming so versatile. And he's like, beginning of the week, I'm in the safety room. I'm making sure that I'm on my P's and Q's about exactly what we're looking for from our safeties against the offense that we're running. He's like, then the next day I'm going in the linebacker room and I'm learning from the linebackers to make sure if I'm at the linebacker level, these are the things we want our linebackers to do. Then he said the next day, he's like, I'm in the third down room. I'm making sure that I'm like on third down, this is what I could do. If they have me at safety, this is what I want to. And so he went through his entire week and it was almost a different room in the defense every day to show up on Saturday and be able to play a lot of those different positions. And so he is somebody who just understands the work and the IQ of having that versatile label. And so a lot of guys just think it's athleticism or size. He gets it. It's up here too. It's between the ears. You got to be trusted to play in a lot of different spots. And so those two dudes, I love their podium sessions, love their tape. I think they'd be fantastic safeties for any team.
Man, that is great stuff. Again, Trevor Sycamore from Pro Football Focus. Appreciate you for stopping by and giving us some knowledge, some more players to keep an eye on as we go through this draft process. Appreciate everybody hanging out. We'll have another special guest talk on the offensive side of the ball right after this.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Welcome back to the KCSN Draft Show. I'm BJ Kissel. We're hanging out on Radio Row. Good stuff there from Trevor Sikkema, talking about some defensive players he would pound the table for. And now we bring on another special guest in Dane Brugler from The Athletic, also the creator of The Beast, the original OG draft guide. I spent years and still do when I was doing more content during the draft and on camera. Dane, I always printed off your guide and always had it with me. He was always promoting it. It's phenomenal work. And so congratulations. I know you put so much time and effort into that thing. Besides KCSN draft guide, which we'll promote as well, I'd also invite people to get your stuff because it's more than just your opinion. You're getting into the background. Yeah. You really do a phenomenal job giving a full picture of who these players are on the field and a little bit off the field as well.
That's the goal, right? You want to paint the picture. You want, there's so many puzzle pieces out there. You know, it's just all about collecting those puzzle pieces and putting together the picture so you have the best idea of who these players are, because the journey, it matters so much. You know, understanding where a guy is coming from helps you understand where he's headed. And so how many sports did he play in high school, family connections, when did he start playing football, all these things. You know, it's just, they're not just fun little sound bites. They're the things that are really relevant as you put together the whole package of who this player is.
Yeah. Like I said, it's an amazing read, and shout out to anybody that hasn't seen it. Go check that out. You will enjoy it. But Dane, as we was explaining before we got started, what we did with Trevor, it's going to be players projected, in your opinion, I was subjective, between picks 50 and 100. So day two picks, basically. Some guys that you would pound the table for, and we're going to be on the offensive side of the ball. I want to start at the tight end position. Mm. I personally have been saying for about 3 years, I figured they, not necessarily Travis Kelce's replacement,
right,
because the Chiefs like to do so much in 12 and 13 personnel, but another talented athletic player that eventually might take over for Travis Kelce if Saturday Night Live goes well this week and he becomes an act. He's going to be good at whatever he decides to do.
No,
so
no,
I hope
question.
He keeps playing football forever. But let's talk through some tight ends, because people that we've talked to so far this week said it's a really intriguing tight end class.
It's deep.
Yeah. So guys, picks 50 to 100. Who's a couple that you would pound the table for?
Yeah. And it's going to start in the first round with those guys. We'll see how many actually go in the first round. But yeah, if we're talking mid to late second round, one of my favorite players is Tucker Kraft, South Dakota State. This is a guy growing up in South Dakota who, just wasn't on the big time recruiting radar, goes to South Dakota State, and he's really grew into a big part of what they do in offense. And if he didn't get hurt in that season opener against Iowa, they beat the Hawkeyes. I put a lot of money on that. He's a difference maker, and he moves really well for his size. He had an ankle injury most of this year, but he's just a really talented player, blocking, receiving. After last year, you know, college football is so different now. You have NIL, you've got transfer portal stuff. After last year, he had six-figure offers to go, and we're talking Alabama. We're talking big schools that wanted this guy. And at the end of the day, he decided to stay put and be with his guys that he, came up with and his coaches. And yeah, they won a national title this year at the FCS level. So Tucker Kraft, definitely a name to keep on the radar.
That's good stuff. Who's another one?
Luke Schoonmaker, Michigan, who is he's a former quarterback. Him and Will Levis were actually teammates back in the day, coming from the Connecticut area. Former quarterback, moves to tight end, big athlete, but he can block too. So you're looking for the guy that maybe isn't elite in any one area, but he can block, he can catch, he can do all those things that you want, a more traditional tight end to do as an inline guy. He can do that, but he also has the athleticism where you want to play him in the slot. He can do that too. So the combo tight end, that it can be a little elusive finding that guy, Luke Schoonmaker. I put a third round grade on him. I think he'll end up going somewhere in the third round, but he's a really good player, him. And then I mentioned Sam LaPorta too. I know that keep it in the Big Ten. He's not the athlete that Noah Fant was or TJ Hockenson, but he's got the grit and competitiveness of like George Kittle, sticking with those Iowa tight ends. He's good size. He's their number one receiver, number one pass catcher. He's just another solid tight end that's going to be in that third round mix.
I don't know if I've asked you this before, and we've been doing interviews like this, it seems like, since I started coming to these things. The tight end position in general, it's changed so much at the NFL level. We've seen it with Travis Kelce, that Andy Reid's ability to maneuver the offense and kind of tailor it to Kelce's strengths is why he's going to be considered one of the greatest tight ends that's ever played the game. The way that you go through your process and you study not just the player individually, but you're studying schemes and just you get to get a global view of the tight end position. Mm-hmm. Have you seen at the college level the game start to change in ways that on a macro level we see at the NFL? Do you see that with your scouting about ways that college offenses are utilizing tight ends over the time that, since you started doing this?
Oh, no doubt. There are a lot of tight ends that don't line up in line. You know, they don't put their hand in the ground. You know, they're more the F tight end as opposed to the Y tight end. And so playing more of that joker, that hybrid version, they're going out running routes. They're out being a pass catcher. And that's great. You know, you want that from your tight ends, but it's important to understand that he wasn't asked to block much. And so, you know, and that's the think about the schools I brought up, Michigan, Iowa, guy, you know, offenses that run more of a pro style scheme. So you do get a chance to see these guys with their hand on the ground, playing more of an inline, use all over the formation, wing, backfield, detach them. So, you know, I think it's maybe the biggest, I mean, he's not a day two guy, but Darnell Washington at Georgia, mm-hmm. you know, he has a chance to go in the first round because he's basically a sixth offensive lineman. And then he gives you some upside in the passing game. So more so than ever, we're seeing more diverse tight ends and what they offer, what they can do for you. And I think it matches up well with a lot of teams and what they're looking for.
All right, let's move on to the wide receiver position, talking about blurring some of those lines with the way these tight ends are used. Who are some of the wide receivers that stand out? And this is an area that Chiefs fans are probably more familiar than probably tight end, just because you look at the Chiefs roster, there's only three guys, I believe. Tucker, you tell me if I'm wrong, but only three guys under contract after this year. It's Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney. Because as of the time that we're recording this, before we get to free agency, Justin Watson scheduled to be a free agent, Mecole Hardman, and Juju Smith-Schuster. Mm. So just from a pure number standpoint, they've got it. They did sign John Ross to a futures deal. They said signed Justin Ross last year. I know Chiefs fans are going to let us know that. but wide receiver is definitely one that you probably draft one every year anyway.
Sure.
But just based on the way that we're sitting here today, they got to add some guys to this mix. So who are some of those guys, again, picks 50 to 100, mid to late second round picks that you think that you would pound the table for, you think might be a good fit with Kansas City?
No, all right. Forget pounding the table. I'm going to stand up on the table. I'm going to just shout until, you know, they call security, get me out of the building. Tyler Scott from Cincinnati. Okay. One of my favorite players in this draft. I really see a guy that could be a Tyler Lockett with his ability. He's a three-level threat, big-time speed guy. He was really a high school running back and an option offense, and then goes to Cincinnati, moves a receiver, and he just got better and better and better each year. He had 14 career touchdowns. His average yards per touchdown is like 45 yards. Like, this is a big play threat. Speed, and we're going to show it here at the combine, all that speed that he has. Maybe not the biggest guy. You sacrifice size a little bit, but he will go up and he'll climb the ladder. He'll go catch the football. But he can create his own spacing. It's not just a track athlete out there. It's a guy that knows how to throttle his speeds, and it's a dance between him and the corner. He gets better and better at understanding that. So Tyler Scott in the second round, that would be the guy that I'm standing up for and saying, let's figure out a way to get him on our roster.
All right, before we get into the second player, one of the phrases we've heard about the wide receiver class this year from a few people is beauty is going to be in the eye of the beholder, mm-hmm. and that there's a lot of different kinds of skills. See guys like Quentin Johnson, see guys like Zay Flowers, completely different skill sets. Stepping back, what do you think overall about the wide receiver class?
Yeah, I mean, we have all the same guys in the same bucket. You know, they're receivers. Meanwhile, Jackson Smith and Jigba and Quentin Johnson play two different positions. Yeah. You know, they're two very different skill sets, roles, what they're going to be asked to do. So, it's important to, and it's kind of like the tight ends, you know, when you have your Y and your F, and we're broad with the way we group them, but it's also important to be specific about what they do and what they're going to be at the next level. With this year's receiver class, it's a good group. We've just been spoiled the last few years, right? You know, 2 years ago with Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle and those guys. And then last year we had six in the top 25. Yeah. This year, I don't know that we're going to have a receiver. There's not one receiver that would point to and say, oh yeah, he's a lock for the top 20. Now there might be one that ends up going top 20, but no locks. And so it'll be interesting how many end up going first round and then who's left for the second round. I think a lot of teams will look at it and say, yeah, we like some of these guys, but we'll wait to the second round because we feel like there's good depth and we don't feel like we have to use a first round resource. But at the same time, teams are looking to get more explosive, looking for playmakers. So I have to say, I say that, but I'm not going to be surprised at all when five end up going in the final 10 picks in the first.
I'm going to give a little shout out to Tucker here because I know Tucker is all over the Zay Flowers plus 550. What was it to be the first wide receiver taken?
Wow. Okay.
Is that a bet that you would take? Do you think there's a chance that Zay Flowers, a team could love him more than any other team loves any other wide receiver in the first round?
Sure, there's a chance. I mean, because I think he's one of those guys that is, I mean, he's smaller, obviously, but I don't think he's strictly a slot only. You know, like you feel like, okay, maybe he can move around for us. Maybe he can be someone that helps us. That's one thing he showed this year that we didn't see in past years, was being a true deep threat for BC. And so another guy, he had offers to go elsewhere, and he decided to stay put and, you know, be loyal to BC. And so, you know, NFL scouts, if you're good, they'll find you. You know, you don't have to go to necessarily a big school. Zay Flowers is a good example of that.
All right. Who's second wide receiver he'd pound the table for?
You know what? I'm gonna say his name, but after he runs, I don't know if he's still going to be in that 50 to Cedric Tillman from Tennessee, 6'3", 215. I won't be surprised if he goes out and runs a sub 4.43. I mean, big time speed, 41 inch in the vertical, probably at least over 40. I think he's got so much ability. This year, banged up with an ankle. I think I have to go back to 2021 tape to really get a great feel for what he offers. A little linear with what he offers, but man, he can win downfield and he could be a ball winner, because with that size and that speed, he'll go up and get it. So the physicality, the play strength, Cedric Tillman, I think, is going to open up some eyes here. And I think he's in that late second conversation, but by the time it's all said and done, that might not be the case in a week.
All right. And speaking of might not be the case, we're going to have the conversation about offensive tackle now. We'll save the exciting one for the last one here. But free agency and what they do, Orlando Brown Jr., Andrew Wiley, it's going to be huge and obviously determining what their draft strategy is at the tackle position. But they've taken Lucas Niang a couple years ago, got banged up, opted out of the first year with COVID. Don't know what you have there. Darian Kennard, another player that could play right tackle, might slide in and be a guard at the level. So they have some young guys in the mix. Would not be surprised at all at any, they're going to take a tackle at some point in this draft. Question is where, who's the first offensive tackle available in that window that you would run to the table for? Should free agency play out in a way that makes sense?
And the tackles are kind of tough to talk about, because we think, you know, Paris Johnson, Broderick Jones, those guys will be first rounders.
Yeah.
But everyone needs tackles, right? Yeah. So I think these guys are going to get pushed up and up. And so, like, a guy like DeJuan Jones from Ohio State, big right tackle, who I think in most years, or, you know, you give him a second round grade, he's a guy we talk about. But in a draft like this, he might get pushed up more and more. So I don't know that he really qualifies for that range. Anton Harrison from Oklahoma, pretty good player. Underclassman, he just turned 21 years old. He's going to be 21 years old his entire rookie year. You see the youth with some of the mistakes that he makes, but it's all fixable. It's all correctable. Mm. Really good athlete, foot athlete, the way he can move. He's got length to him. So Anton Harrison, if he's still available there in that mid-second, late-second round, I think he'd be tremendous value at that point as a guy that you think can start right away, at least challenge for a job. But you're drafting him for what he's going to give you down the road.
I don't know. Again, questions. I don't know if I can articulate this the right way. And I know it's in beauty in the eye of the beholder. But for you, say you're in Brett Veach's shoes and you get to second, third, we can say day three, tackles are available. Would you lean towards, I don't say the project, but the athlete that's raw versus the experienced starter at a big school that's played in big games? Like, which side would you lean on if you're looking at day three and you know he's not going to be a guy that can start right away? Would you just lean towards the project, you know, it's going to take some effort, that the high upside, or a guy that you think could be plug and play sooner rather than later, but maybe a lower ceiling?
Yeah, and I really think it just, you have to look at your roster and say, okay, are we set right now where if we had to play a game tomorrow, we feel good about the tackles we're going to put out there? Or do we need a guy like a Tyler Steen from Alabama, who might not have that high ceiling, but we feel pretty good about putting him out there and he's not going to kill us. He's not going to, you know, step on his own toes. You know, he reminds me a lot of like a Bobby Hart, you know, like a guy who maybe is not the best lineman on the team or one of the top four on the team, but you know what? He's played in the NFL for 10 years because, you know, he can play tackle, can play guard. He can fill in at different spots and, you know, you get him and that's the type of player.
Describing Andrew Wiley.
Yeah, no, he's a great example of, I mean, Andrew Wiley couldn't play for a winless team in Cleveland, but you know what? Guys get better. Guys, you know, you get different coaching and, you know, you learn different techniques. And so, no, it's Andrew Wiley is a good example of a guy that fits that mold.
All right. before we let you go, we've talked tight end, we've talked wide receiver, offensive tackle, and your thoughts in looking at the Chiefs roster and the players in this draft. Is there anybody on the offensive side of the ball that you think would, above any position anywhere on offense, that you think would just be the perfect fit you would want to see with Andy Reid?
Jalen Hyatt. I mean, I want to see bring that speed aspect to the, to what that offense does, that over the top. I mean, just with him out there, you have to respect speed. That changes the way defenses play you. And so that threat, I mean, in a lot of ways, you're getting probably a younger, more explosive Valdez Scantling, you know, like that type of player. So I would love to see that matchup. I mean, sometimes, you know, you could kind of force it in a mock draft just because you want to see it. I, also, like a Jaxon Smith-Njigba would be fun, who's not that type, but he's going to get open, and the repertoire between him and Mahomes would be a lot of fun to watch.
I put out a couple of tweets on Jalen Hyatt earlier, and I'm adding this clarifier for Chiefs fans. Doesn't mean I like Jalen Hyatt. I didn't put out any other videos, any other guys. I just happened to be standing in his presser. I was like, I'm going to get my phone out. And then he was asked specifically about Kansas City and if he had taken a visit or he had met with them. And he said, yes, I sat down with Andy Reid and their offensive staff, and we watched film. He was smiling the whole time. And then he was asked about, why do you think you're the best, you know, who's the best wide receiver in this draft? And every wide receiver says, I am. Yeah. But came across a really confident player. And then everybody on social is like, no, not in the first and this. And I was like, I'm just happen to be standing here.
Yeah.
So not trying to drop any nuggets or any information in that way, but definitely another one of those players. I personally just like Zay Flowers. We had a chance to talk to him at the East-West Shrine Bowl. Watching a little bit of his tape. He's a fun player to watch as well. But it's Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Make sure you're following him and you subscribe to The Athletic, and make sure you subscribe and make sure you get the Beast draft guide. It is the perfect best draft guide that is out there. Shout out to Maddie, Craig, and everybody that's the KCSN draft guide. But they have sung your praises for years, as is everybody in this business, Dane. Appreciate your time, man.
Anytime. Thank you.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.